From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly update from ACC.org. I'm recording this on June 22nd, 2020. Today I've chosen three articles. The articles relate to COVID-19. One is a genome-wide association study, another is looking at the pandemic in India. And then last is a survey of safe reintroduction of cardiovascular services. So let's start with the Genome-Wide Association Study, or GWAS. This is a study where the authors wanted to compare the genome-wide association assessment in over 2,000 patients with confirmed COVID-19 infection and severe infection, that is, requiring either oxygen supplementation or mechanical ventilation, to over 2,000 controls. And these were randomly selected blood donors and healthy volunteers. The patients in this study came from 3 hospitals in Italy and 4 hospitals in Spain. In the patients, the average age was 65, 35% were women. The rates of mechanical ventilation in the hospitals of interest were quite varied, from 15 to 69%. 20% had diabetes, 45% hypertension. And the authors controlled for age, gender, hypertension, diabetes, and of course, oxygen need. They found 2 different loci associated with severe COVID-19, comparing the cases to the controls. One of these was locus 3P21.31, and this relates to lung function. The odds ratio of genetic variation at that location was 1.77. The other was an ABO blood group locus, 9Q34.2, where the odds ratio was 1.32. And interestingly, it looked like blood group A had a higher risk of severe infection, odds ratio 1.45, while blood group O was apparently protected with an odds ratio of 0.65. So I think this is really the first of what will be many genetic studies looking at whether we can tease out additional modifiers of risk in patients who are at risk for or who have COVID-19. A couple of thoughts. First of all, it's a small study. Genetic studies of 2,000 patients, that's small. And of course, we know that genetic variation region to region can be dramatic. So we can't make too much of it. The other thing is the control group were healthy volunteers, not patients who had COVID-19 who did not have severe respiratory infection. And finally, the hazard ratio was less than 2 for each of these loci, meaning that the overall effect, if there is one, was relatively modest. However, I think the study is important in that it gives us kind of a window into future studies that hopefully will allow us to, in addition to clinical markers, identify genetic and biomarkers that will help us to determine people at higher risk. And of course, hopefully this will define best practice in terms of treatment. So let's shift gears. This is a study that came out in the European Heart Journal looking at the response to COVID-19 in India. And I think it's an interesting article and provides some perspectives that I thought you might like. First of all, India has 1.35 billion people. And the COVID cases there have been mainly in areas like New Delhi, Mumbai, and others. They've had about 400,000 cases and 13,000 deaths. The government response has been vigorous, an 8-week lockdown public awareness campaign. They've had a novel smartphone application to do contact tracing and so forth. Their testing has been limited, only 1.6 million tests as of May 10th. And they had a 4% positivity in the country. There's been debate about community transmission. The Ministry of Health has said that the country has not entered stage 3. But the question about cases in some of the communities with less access to medical care and testing is debated. The assertion of absence of evidence is not evidence of absence is something to think about. And sometimes in huge population areas, it's very difficult to get a handle on the number of patients who have it. There's some interesting choices that India has made with reportive therapy. The task force of Indian Council for Medical Research recommended hydroxychloroquine 400 milligrams twice a day for 5-7 days and 400 milligrams once a week for asymptomatic healthcare workers and treating patients with suspected COVID-19, and for asymptomatic household members. They've also empirically been using antiviral agents in their therapy, and they have set protocols for admission and discharge. They have decided certain hospitals will be COVID-19, and also hospitals triage fever patients to specialized clinics to try to cohort these patients. Anecdotal evidence suggests that patients with acute coronary syndromes may have avoided going to the hospital. And this appears to be particularly true in women and the elderly, who traditionally avoid hospitals anyway in India, by report. And we've seen this in study after study, suggesting patients are fearful of contacting COVID-19, and so sometimes with life-threatening illnesses, they stay home. The government has taken an active approach to develop a vaccine. They have six companies working with their National Institute of Virology to try to develop their vaccine. And they certainly have a pandemic preparedness model. India, as you know, was a leader in conquering polio, and their surveillance systems are gearing up. And certainly there are aspects to their response that appear to be very impressive. India has had a well-based strategy, partly because other countries before it had trouble, thinking about Italy and Spain. And of course, their debate, just like the debate we have in this country, is this Hamletian dilemma for policymakers. Do we focus on lives or livelihood? And India, like the U.S., is wrestling with that. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting survey of what's happening in India, and I think there are some lessons for us here. And of course, every region is different. The population is different. The viral load in the population is different. Lastly, let's talk briefly about how we reintroduce cardiovascular services during COVID-19. I don't know about you, but I'm seeing patients in the clinic again, and it's a completely different era for us. Obviously, the goal here is an ethical strategy that maximizes the benefits to our patients, continues to provide fairness in terms of addressing healthcare inequities, and weighs the benefits of procedures and visits and so forth against the risk of spreading the virus. Clearly, hospital teams and clinic teams must work with public health officials as they look at the overall presence of the virus in a community to decide how and when to open up. And this partnership has never been more important than right now. Obviously, we need certain services. We need critical care capacity. We need PPE. We need testing. We need preparedness for increased testing if there's a surge. We need to practice social distancing. We need to limit patient contact. We need to offer virtual care when it's appropriate. We need to minimize visitors with patients. And certainly, we want to do the use of masks to protect both patients and workers alike. The general strategy, as you know, is three levels of response. Level two is the reintroduction of some services. Level one is most services, and level zero is all regular services and ongoing testing and surveillance. Level two proposes that you resume services for high-risk patients, coronary intervention in high-risk people, cardiac surgery in high-risk people, echo in patients where the findings will impact short-term impact, and imaging for very important clinical problems, especially that relate to short-term outcomes. Level one, that's the reintroduction of most services, is still deferring some services for stable patients like echo or ablation for stable patients, but most services are being offered. And level zero basically is beginning to offer routine services for all patients. Obviously, this is a dynamic, and so you might go from level two to level one and even level zero, and then if there's a surge, you might have to drift backwards. And this, of course, is the great dilemma. Once we see kind of an opening up of providing services, both for patients and providers alike, it's going to be very challenging emotionally, and if not ethically and financially, to go back in the other direction. Well, I wanted to offer you these three different perspectives of COVID-19 today in this week's podcast. I think each of them provides a sort of information that is important as we think about our new normal living with this virus. If you go to the ACC website, acc.org, you'll find a wonderful COVID-19 hub. It has all kinds of information. The articles and the journal scans pertaining to these particular topics today are listed there. And there's all kinds of information that I think will be helpful to you. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View this week, and I hope you have a very good week and a safe one. And I look forward to talking to you next week.